हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 23, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, chapter 11, Aspects of Transcendental Service. So verse 1, 2, 2 of 3. Service to things related to the Lord, from verse 88. Service to Tulsi, from verse 89. Illustrated from Skanda Purana. Seeing Tulsi destroys all sins. Touching her purifies the body. Bowing to her destroys all sufferings. Sprinkling her with water delivers one from death. Planting her bestows attachment to the mind of Lord Krishna. Offering her to Krishna's lotus feet bestows special liberation in the form of prema. I offer my respects to Tulsi. Srila Prabhupada, serving trees such as Tulsi. In the Skanda Purana, there's a statement praising the Tulsi tree as follows. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Tulsi tree, which can immediately vanquish volumes of sinful activities. Simply by seeing or touching this tree, one can be relieved from all distresses and diseases. Simply by offering obeisances to and pouring water on the Tulsi tree, one can become freed from the fear of being sent to the court of Yamaraj, the king of death, who punishes the sinful. If someone sows the Tulsi tree somewhere, certainly he becomes devoted to Lord Krishna. And when the Tulsi trees are offered in devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna, there is the full development of love of Godhead. In India, all Hindus, even those not belonging to the Vaishnava group, take special care of the Tulsi tree. Even in great cities where it is very difficult to keep a Tulsi tree, people are to be found very carefully keeping this plant. They water it and offer obeisances to it, because worship of the Tulsi tree is very important in devotional service. Srila Jiva Goswami. Bapu Pavani, purifying the body, means purifying a person of his bad birth or other karmas. Roganam, right, because the body is a result of what's there from the past. Right? So then whatever the body is just a symptom of whatever is one's karma. So if one is purified of the causes of that. Right? Because we may look at it that it's about removing the sins of the reactions we're going to get now or going to coming up. But actually, that's not the real problem. Right? The real problem is that we're influenced by that stock of sins. Therefore, the consciousness is not inclined towards Krishna. It's inclined towards the material. That's the real problem. Right? So we see here is that it removes one. I mean, it purifies a person of his bad birth or other karmas. Right? And then you see here is that seeing Tulsi destroys all sins, touching her purifies the body. So we think it's two different things, but actually it's and then destroys all suffering. That this is actually, it's removing these kind of aspects that cause all this. Right? Roganam, destroying all sickness, indicates destroying all types of suffering. Right? Because whatever is there, the suffering is coming up from sin. Right? And so then also the disease, that can mean what we would generally take as disease, but it also just mean the material disease, the material desire. That's also a disease. Right? It's a sickness of the soul. Pratya sati means attachment of the mind. Vimukti, special liberation, means prema bhakti, right? Because ordinary liberation means you go up and you come back. then but developing prema, now that's special liberation, because that actually takes you beyond.
Okay.
Yes.
To the sea is only, it is said here it is very important to offer to the sea leaf to Krishna. Is it only to Krishna or is some other demigod?
No, only Tulsi is only offered to Krishna. Demigods, is you don't need Tulsi. There's no... means only to... Tulsi is only offered to Vishnu Tattva. Yeah, so that's the... 1.2.204-205. Also from the Skanda Purana. Those who worship auspicious Tulsi daily by 9 processes, namely, seeing, touching, meditating, glorifying, offer obeisances, praising, planting, serving, and worshipping her, live in the Lord's house for 10 billion yugas. Srila Prabhupada. In the Skanda Purana, there's another statement about Tulsi as follows. Quote, Tulsi is auspicious in all respects. Simply by seeing, simply by touching, simply by remembering, simply by praying to, simply by bowing before, simply by hearing about, or simply by sowing this tree, there is always auspiciousness. Anyone who comes in touch with the Tulsi tree in the above-mentioned ways lives eternally in the Vaikuntha world. Right, so if you're dealing with individuals who are always looking at what's the benefit you'll get, and that you go to heavenly planets, this for 10,000 years, this for, you know, something like that, but here's 10 billion yugas, so, you know, it's a while. So, for them, then they understand, okay, this is big. But it actually means you go to Vaikuntha. It's eternal. It's just you're putting in a language that they can understand. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So we see is who engaged in it by daily, Tulsi daily by 9 processes. It doesn't mean that you have to do all 9 in a day. It means that you're always worshipping Tulsi by one of these processes. Or many of them. So the Prabhupada says simply by doing this, just by any one of them, worshipping her is so is so auspicious that one will eternally live in Vaikuntha. Does that make sense? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura. Ropita comes from the root ruhu, which means dat varta is sprouting seeds, planting, and making them visible, growing. The causative form is ropayati, and the principle is ropita. Thus, the meaning is that every day one should handle the tulsi in such a way that there will be leaves and buds available every day, not that one should plant them every day. Right? Because he's saying here is the root means sprouting and making them visible. So then the leaves which are offered to the Lord, then they're becoming more and more visible. So she's growing nicely, the mandris are coming, the leaves are there. That's what it means. Not that every day you plant a new tulsi plant. Right? Okay. So chapter 12, further aspects of transcendental service. 1.2.206. Service to the scriptures. From verse 89. Scriptures here refers to those scriptures which present bhakti. Right, because that's the one that you mean, not scriptures on, you know, on the apara vidya. You know, that's pious, but it's not devotion, it's not service to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, hearing the revealed scriptures. According to Srila Rupa Goswami, any book which gives enlightenment in the matter of advancement and devotional service is considered to be revealed scripture. Srila Madhvacharya has also defined revealed scripture as referring to books such as the Ramayana, Mahabharata, Puranas, Upanishads, Vedanta, and any other literature written in pursuance of such revealed scriptures. That's why the offenses to blasphemy of the Vedic version are those in pursuance of the Vedic version. Right? So the Vedic version is bhakti, so therefore the devotional scriptures or anything in pursuance of the devotion. 1.2.207-209. From Skanda Purana. O Narada, fortunate are those people in this world who hear and read the Vaishnava scriptures. Krishna is pleased with them. Those who worship the Vaishnava scriptures in their houses become free of all sins and are praised by the devatas. The Supreme Lord Narayan himself lives in the house where the written Vaishnava scriptures have appeared. So then the keeping of the transcendental literature and all that, then that's always the, you know, it's a very standard thing. You have that just, but they're there, then that gives so much auspiciousness. Now you're also supposed to read it. Right? Service, okay, you have them there, you take care of them nicely, you know, you respect them, but it's also good if you read them. Right? It is also said to Narad Muni, "My dear Narada, a person who writes Vaishnava literature and keeps such literature at home has Lord Narayan always residing in his house." 1.2.2.10. Also in the 12th canto, service to scriptures is illustrated. Quote, "Srimad Bhagavatam is declared as the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from its nectarian mellow will never be attracted to any other literature." But these other literatures, unless it's being applied to the vision of Bhagavatam, then there's no point of the other literatures. Otherwise, what will they do for you? Unless how Bhagavatam is showing the connection to the Lord, you're applying it in that way. So it's in some way serving or assisting the service to Krishna. So from Srimad Bhagavatam, 12.13.15, Srila Prabhupada. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, 13th chapter, verse 15, it is stated, "Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. Any person who has become attached in some way or other to the reading of Srimad Bhagavatam cannot have any taste for reading any other literature." In other words, a person who has relished the transcendental bliss of Srimad Bhagavatam cannot be satisfied with mundane writings. Right? They just don't, there's no taste. What taste is there? That's the 1.2.2.11. Seeing Mathura and other holy places, right? So Krishna consciousness is so auspicious, it removes the interest in the material. And it starts to develop the attraction to Krishna.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada, in his translation, he put the term reading.
Yes.
So just make the point.
But when you say never attracted, means that, you know, it's not that you're just attracted that the book is there.
Yeah.
It would mean to read it.
Yeah.
See, that's the whole point, is what the acharyas mean by this, because we're seeing it in English. When the Sanskrit itself, the words have so many meanings, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur showed, that planting means that it's you're nourishing, you're growing. You're seeing that the leaves are appearing.
Yes.
So on a plant, the leaves appear where it's growing.
Yes.
Right? So that's there. Now when you do a direct, you do a Moni or Williams translation, then the difficulty comes is that you might lose some of that, that depth of meaning that's there. Right? So we've seen some devotees that Prabhupada's translation is there, and they go back and correct it because it's not exactly according to the dictionary. Like that. It never worked out well for any of them. Right? And they were scholars, very intelligent, but they were not intelligent enough. So we see is that this whole point is that they're bringing out what is meant there by the acharya. So they understand. They're on the transcendental platform, so they know what that means, what the word means. When he says you won't be attracted, means you won't read them, you won't want them around, you won't want to hear from them, you won't want to discuss them, like that. So it means all of that. So that's why it said, a person who has relished the transcendental bliss of Srimad Bhagavatam cannot be satisfied with mundane writing. So however you're dealing with it. So unless there's some aspect of service, then there's no interest. You know, like reading the newspaper. So unless by reading the newspaper you'll know things that are going to have some effect on the service in the temple or like this, then what's the point? Like you see in general, before, devotees just didn't read the newspaper. But the same time as then, so there was some program coming up and something happened, but there was something going on in the city and the temple president didn't know about that, so the program didn't work, and Prabhupada said, why didn't you know that? It's regular news. Why aren't you reading the newspaper? So you're reading the newspaper in the context of, is there anything that's going to affect Krishna consciousness? Not that you're reading it because you like reading newspapers. Does that make sense? So you're going through, scanning through, and seeing what may be relevant for something, for knowledge for this, and then that's, you know. But otherwise, then it it itself, you can't be satisfied with it, so it's only what's useful it using in the service. So, 1.2.2.12. This is illustrated in the Brahmanda Purana. The bliss at the stage of prema, which is rarely attained even by serving all the holy places in the three worlds, is available just by touching Mathura. Srila Prabhupada, residing in Mathura. In the Varaha Purana, there is a statement praising the transcendental quarters of Mathura. Lord Varaha tells the men of earth, any person who becomes attracted to places other than Mathura will certainly be captivated by the illusory energy. In the Brahmanda Purana, it is said that all the results of traveling on all the pilgrimages within the three worlds can be achieved simply by touching the holy land of Mathura. In many shastras, scriptures, it is said that simply by hearing, remembering, glorifying, desiring, seeing, or touching the land of Mathura, one can achieve all desires. So when you say Mathura here, it means in the Lord's residence. So Mayapur, Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. 1.2.2.13. Hearing about, remembering, glorifying, desiring, seeing, visiting, touching, taking shelter, and serving Mathura fulfills all the desires of human beings. This has been described in all the Puranas. I have not elaborated this here for fear of increasing the volume of the work. Srila Jiva Goswami. The meaning of prekshita, seen, is to be seen from a distance, going close by, though not contacting directly. Shita means accepting as one's shelter. Sevita means serving with activities such as cleaning the place. You know, cleaning, beautifying, like this. You know, also glorifying these service. The items in this list fulfill the desires of all beings with successively increasing power. Thus, serving is the most powerful. Yes. So serving, such as cleaning. So you see, is that, you know, in one sense, even though before it was different, you see the, I said we have these hired guys sweeping the roads and all that, they're getting the most benefit of many. Like that. Though for they may not see this as service, but so you see is that if you can render service to us, not we're just not living here, but we should be serving the Dham. Like that. 1.2.2.14. Service to Vaishnavas, verse 89 from Padma Purana 6.2.5.3.176. Wow. A lot of chapters. Padma Purana. Of all types of worship, worship of Vishnu is supreme. O Devi, worship of his devotees, however, is even superior to that. Rendering service to devotees. In the Padma Purana, there is a nice statement praising the service of the Vaishnavas, or devotees. In that scripture, Lord Shiva tells Parvati, my dear Parvati, there are different methods of worship, and out of all such methods, the worship of the Supreme Person is considered to be the highest. But even higher than the worship of the Lord is the worship of the Lord's devotees. Right? Because Krishna serves the devotees. So if you're helping him serve the devotees, then that's considered the best.
Last year, sometime, some spiritual leader, or I don't know who, or had 50 or 100 disciples or his followers in the entire Mayapur. They're on the streets of all the Gaurnagar, gullies and everything, cleaning, just picking up. They're like husband, wife, child, like, you know, full families.
Okay, clean, yeah. Point is to render service to the Dham.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that kind of aspect is there. So cleaning, beautifying is very standard ways, you know. Means also appreciating, glorifying, remembering, all these different aspects. But it says that serving, so that cleaning aspect is always nice. That's why it's previously before, as people always, you know, they're cleaning the house, cleaning the things, cleaning all this stuff, you know. So if you're living in the Dham, then you look at it, you're serving the Dham. If we're looking at it from living in a city, then cleaning of the city is always up to the governance. Right? So we don't do that. the streets clean because the government does it, not because we do it. You know, but the Vedic tradition is we would do it. Like I was saying before, I was seeing in long time ago, you know, I mean, 70s, you know, 80s, maybe even into the 90s, early. Like I remember seeing in Tinagar, where you have, you know, the residential areas, you have both sides of the streets are houses. You know, and it's not, there's not apartments, they're houses. So you have your fence on one side and the fence on the other. So they would be cleaning their place, but they would also clean in front of their fence onto the road, up to the middle of the road. So in other words, from the width of their property up to the middle of the road, back into to their fence, they would clean that. And then they would do some rangoli in that in front of their gate. So if you went down the street, the whole street was clean. You didn't have to have street sweepers. That's for, you know, places where people don't live. You know, in the main city, you know, where the businesses are and that. Then you have the street sweepers. So they would clean and decorate. So if you went, it was very nice and clean and everything like that. So that's the tradition. Nowadays, you know, because the city dwellers, it's, you know, even the apartments kept clean by whoever runs the society that controls the building. Right, and then the streets and that are maintained by the city because, you know, we pay our taxes, so they should do something, right? You know, like that. So the mentality of serving and cleaning is not necessarily understood. Like many times it's, you know, yeah. So this aspect of being able to clean and do these kind of things, that's why cleanliness is such an important part of the Vaishnava culture. So that aspect is seen as service. You know, not as, oh, he could be doing something more important. Right? So unless you are managing to, how you say, see that cleaning's going on, everyone's engaged in that cleaning and service to the Dom, okay, then you're doing some management. You know what I'm saying? But in this capacity, it's that you do yourself. You clean, you do. Like that. So before it was very, very, you know, very common, the cleaning of 1:2:2:16, right? And it says here, you know, it's the most powerful, and by this, then you come up. So then, yeah. So then, this service to the devotees, Krishna is serving the devotees, right? They're serving him; he's serving the devotees. So if you also assist him in serving the devotees, he's very happy. 1:2:2:16. Also, the Skanda Purana says, where. Where sin is, I guess, or where is sin for the person who has seen a Vaishnava whose body is marked with conch and disc, who has Tulsi Manjaris on his head, and whose limbs are smeared with Gopi Chandan. Right, so from the deities, you get the Chandan, you know, you're putting the Tilak, the conch and pub, then you take, Charinamrita, and afterwards then you're putting on your head, so like that, not that you have to walk around with Tulsi Manjaris on your head and stuff. I've even seen some people paint them on the foreheads just to follow this verse. Srila Prabhupada, in the Skanda Purana, there's a similar statement. Persons whose bodies are marked with tilak, symbolizing the conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus, and who keep the leaves of tulsi on their heads, and whose bodies are always decorated with Gopi Chandan, even seen once, can help the seer be relieved from all sinful activities. So the idea is that seeing a devotee who is identifying as a devotee and keeping the Lord's remnants, wearing those things. Like Uddhava said, we wear, you know, your garlands, your sandalwood paste and all these things. Then that is whoever sees then can be relieved from all sinful activities. So it means the devotee is just walking down the street, they're relieving everybody from sinful activity. And those who don't, by, you know, their own philosophy, then they're just blending in. So they're not becoming purified, and neither is anyone else. But this other, then, people are getting so much agyata sukriti. You're preaching just by walking down the street. People are getting purified. 1:2:2:17. The first canto says, simply by remembering you, our houses have become instantly sanctified. and what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.19.33. Srila Prabhupada. Similar statement is found in the first canto, 19th chapter, verse 33 of Srimad Bhagavatam. There is no doubt about one's becoming freed from all reactions to sinful activities after visiting a devotee or touching his lotus feet or giving him a sitting place. Even by remembering the activities of such a Vaishnava, one becomes purified along with one's whole family. And what then can be said of rendering direct service to him? So just by seeing, by, you know, how you say, remembering, then the activities, you get purified. You know, and not only that, your whole family becomes purified. Just like if you commit, how you say, you offend the Vaishnavas, it doesn't just affect you, it affects your family also. Right? You can say, well, they did not do anything. But if we say, just by seeing and remembering the Vaishnavas, then you become purified along with other family. Oh, that's very nice. You know? Oh, it's being shared. Yeah, he does something wrong, it's also shared. Hey, that's, we didn't do anything. Yeah. Ramachandra Khan. Yeah, he offended Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And that the whole village was they came and destroyed the village and took everybody in the village, I think, as slaves. Like that. Burnt the place to the ground. So it's like, you know, nothing there. Because he came, and after Nityananda left, then he dug up the ground where he sat to purify. Because ground is purified by digging. So he dug up the ground there. So you're not going to get much worse than that. So it's not only he did that, but it means his whole village got destroyed. It's the same with the king. If they offend, it can affect the whole kingdom. Right? We may think, no, it's just our thing, so it only affects us. But, you know, but it affects everybody. You say, well, he did this, and everybody's disturbed, so therefore, then, you know, you have to deal very strongly. But at the same time, is if it's inappropriate, then you have the problem is then everybody under the charge of that person applying the punishment also gets disturbed. Not from that Vaishnava, but from the reaction, the aparadha. That's right. Punishment is very, one has to be very careful about punishment. Because it doesn't just affect the person you punish. It affects, if it's wrong, it affects the person who did the punishing, anyone who agrees with it, and anybody connected with any of them. That means their wife, their family, their dentist, their local florist, you know, like that. Everybody becomes affected. So we see the opposite. You serve the Vaishnavas in that, then Krishna is the most pleased. It's higher than worshipping Krishna. So that means you do the opposite, it will give the heaviest results. Was that?
Maharaj, this is inspiring us to focus on Krishna.
Yes. The whole point is just appreciate Vaishnavas. That's the whole point. Right? So Krishna does. You see, anybody who's doing a little service, Krishna appreciates. So we should be appreciating that. See that aspect that they're trying to do something for Krishna. Right? So that's why then if you're using the Vedic culture, it's so much easier. Because even if you're following the culture, but let's say one is coming from a more, you know, how you say, traditional or conservative Hindu background. Right? So as it was said before in the Tattva Sandarbha, that the activities of bhakti are written into the Varnashram system. So you have to be respectful to seniors, to sadhus, to, you know, others, be grateful for what anybody's done for you, and be able to try to see that proper side. So then, by habit, you'll be being nice, even though it's just material. Then one takes up devotional service, it'll be very easy to do these activities now connected to Krishna. And even if you don't connect them, at least you're being nice, and it has an effect. That's why it's superior. Well, if one, you know, falls back on one's previous lifestyle that wasn't Vedic, then very few things in there have any purity to them or any depth. Even you're nice to everybody, But is it a nice because you care about the people? Or is it nice because you're just supposed to be nice? So it's dutiful, right? Even though they're the ones that complain about people doing things out of duty. No, you have to be free and all this. Then why do we have to be nice to everybody? You're controlling us by these rules. You know? You say other rules are bad, but these rules are good. And who made up these rules? You made up the rules. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that one won't know what to do, not do, and all that. And so seemingly the you know, working for the greater good, the social and economic things, then those may take precedent over proper behavior. Because that before was considered the standard. While you're working for the personal aspect, the community, and these kind of things from, you know, the proper, you know, recommended activities, then it's, how do you say? It's easier. That's why it's recommended. Right? Because it's really hard to digest that after 40 or 50 years, people are still saying, oh, but we're from a Western background. That means you've been a devotee longer than you were a karmi. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say someone from another place in the world moved to, let's say, Paris. Like that. And they're there for 40 years. How long can they go on and go, I'm Australian, you know, I can't learn this language. You know? Okay, well, 1 year, 6 months, a couple of years. You know, after 2-3 years, you expect them to be able to get around the market, buy something. Maybe they can't have a conversation, but they should be able to buy something. Get in a taxi. Actually get to where they want. Right? Not end up in Slovenia or something. Right? You know, like that. But does that make sense? Like that. So after that much time, you expect them to speak, to be able to do, know all the customs and all that kind of thing. It's just, it's like that anywhere. You understand? So that's why it's recommended you take up this lifestyle that the Vaishnavas live. You see, the way they dress, the way they behave, that service to Vaishnavas, service to the Dham. These are the important things. Yes? No? Right. 1:2-18. Adi Purana says, those who claim to be my devotees are not my devotees. Those who are the devotees of my devotees, I consider them to be my best devotees. Srila Prabhupada. In the Adi Purana, is the following statement by Lord Krishna himself, addressed to Arjuna. My dear Partha, the one who claims to be my devotee is not so. Only a person who claims to be the devotee of my devotee is actually my devotee. No one can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 1380. One must approach him through his pure devotees. Therefore, in the system of Vaishnava activities, the first duty is to accept a devotee as spiritual master and then to render service unto him. Right? We see when the 64 start, it starts there. And if that's in place, then everything else falls into place. 1:2-19. All the angas of bhakti described in relation to the Lord are also angas in relation to the devotees of the Lord. This is the conclusion of the wise. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami affirms that all the quotations given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu from different scriptures are accepted by the great acharyas and devotees of the Lord. 1:2-20. So they all accept that, you know, one worships the Lord, one worships the Lord through the devotees. 1:2-20. Observing festivals according to one's wealth, verse 89, illustrated from the Padma Purana. O King, he who performs a festival for the temple of the Lord experiences for eternity a festival in the planet of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada. Serving the Lord according to one's position. In the Padma Purana, there's a statement that one should perform the ceremonies for the Lord according to one's financial position. Everyone should observe the different ceremonies and celebrations of the Lord by all means. 1.2.221. Observing Urja Vrata from verse 890 from the Padma Purana. Just as men know that Damodar is affectionate to his devotee, the Damodar month is also affectionate to the devotee. Even a little service performed during that month yields great results. Srila Prabhupada. Performing devotional service in Kartik. One of the most important of these ceremonial functions is called Urja Vrata. Urja Vrata is observed in the months of Kartik, October to November. Especially in Vrindavan, there is a specific program for temple worship of the Lord in its Damodar form. Damodara refers to Krishna being bound with rope by his mother, Yashoda. It is said that just as Lord Damodar is very dear to his devotees, so the month known as Damodara or Kartik is also very dear to them. The execution of devotional service during Urja Vrata in the month of Kartik is especially recommended to be performed at Mathura. This system is still followed by many devotees. They go to Mathura or Vrindavan and stay there during the month of Kartik, specifically to perform devotional service during this period. Right? So you go there to then worship the Lord more. Hey, we're worshiping every day, but then during Kartik we try to do more. You know, try to be more considerate, more, you know, think of what more we could do. Instead of just doing the regular, we try to do some extra activities for Krishna. So,
imagine it's like Ekadashi.
Like Ekadasi, meaning yes, means that you try to do something more. You know, the festivals and that, but here's a month straight. Because the others, Ekadasi comes and then, you know, it's one day, it goes, the festival is a day, and then it goes. But here, then, there's a month at one time where then you try to, you know, maintain something like that. So that's you can do something for a day, then you do all that, then you can start to do something for a month. Srila Jiva Goswami. The month is affectionate just as Damodara is affectionate. Thus, a little service to Damodara becomes multiplied if performed during that month. Uru Karaka means a person, in this case, the month, who accepts something very small and makes it very big. Like a person who feels extremely indebted and performs great actions for another person. Similarly, this month, called Kartika month, gives great benefit. It takes that which is meager and makes it significant. Swalpam Uru Karaka means the month of Damodar is a future giver of huge results for a little service. The formation of Swalpam Uru Karakaha instead of Swalpasya in genitive case with Uru Karakaha is according to the rule at Akenor Bhavishyad Adhamar Nayo. Genitive case is forbidden for words relating to verbal forms ending in aka, karaka, or in which, or in, which denote futurity or indebtedness. Panini 2.3.70. Just in case you wondering. Right, because otherwise then some people will go, oh, but, you know, that's the problem. We mentioned that before. That some would do that. But he's quoting from Panini here, so. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yeah, so, because Panini has all the rules, and that is the grammar, then we see is that Jiva Goswami then wrote that grammar so it's actually understandable, you know, for Vaishnavas, as Harinamamrita Vyakarana. But that's also it adjusts that it's Narayan's grammar rather than Shiva's. So the slight difference. Not really much, but it's like dialects. It's the same thing, but there's, you know, it's just like here in the city they'll use the language one way, you go out into the suburbs, it's different, you go out to the village, it's another way. So like that, there's eight different forms of Sanskrit in the universe. You know, but everybody understands each other. Shiva speaks in one way, Indra another, Brahma another, like this. So, yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Just as Damodara is known to be affectionate to the devotees, similarly the month of Damodara is affectionate and yields great results for a little service. Taking the excuse of the little service as some sort of huge debt, the month generously wipes out the debt with great rewards. In the phrase Swalpam Apyuru Karaka, Apyuru Karaka, the use of accusative case instead of genitive case is poetic license. Where there's a little service, it can produce huge results. The word karakaha can be taken as karam, with verbs expressing possibility. Karam can have the meaning of an infinitive form. There is a possibility to produce, because it may, you know, in the future it gives these rewards. Thus, the phrase uru karaka can mean is able to produce great benefits. Footnote 6 from Panini 3.4.12. Yeah, so he's giving from another place. The month of Damodara is called Kartik month. Being very affectionate to the devotees is able to produce great benefits even by only a little service. So, therefore, if you're looking at just with a little service, one can get so much benefit, why not do more service, right? Because otherwise you see, oh, a little is enough, you'll get so much return. Let us say, okay, we're running for this month some kind of investment scheme. You put in 10 rupees, and at the end of the month, you'll get back 1,000. Right? We don't need a big investment. You know how sometimes these investments, you have to put in, a lakh or, some big amount of money. With just 10 rupees, we'll do it. It's just a little bit, and we give you big returns. And you go, okay, well, that's nice. So you don't have to do much. So I'll just invest 10 rupees. Right? Is that what you do? That right, isn't it? Or would you invest as much as you have? Right. So the same way, since a little service will give so much return, why not do as much as you can?
So now here it seems that the other month, what is the month, is like a person.
Every month is a person.
Like a season. Like
the season. Yeah, it means that there's nothing that's not a person. Like you said, like it's saying before, the earth said, the water said, they're all people. There's somebody who controls that potencies and that manifestation. So depending upon in the universe whose court you're in, depends upon who's in their court. Like in Yamaraj, death personified, it stays in his court. So like that. So Indra will have others to do with, management and power. Brahma then has all the personified Vedas. Like that. So the whole, everything is represented personally. Because Krishna is a person. We may not know and all that, but if anything happens, and let's say we come in, and in the morning there's a big pile of stuff in the middle of the room, we're going to say, who put this here? And if we just say, no, it just happens. It's just by chance. Like that. There's no people involved. And we say, what do you mean? It's got to be a person involved. But then we come to the universe, oh, no, there's no people involved. It just happens by chance. Right? So a pile of garbage, then that has to be a person, but, which is that was random, but then something like the how nicely the universe is organized and how perfectly it is, that's just by chance. Right. So we see that there's logical bias here. People aren't using their intelligence. So therefore, the Kartik month, as a person, they appreciate and then they reciprocate. Also, the Mulamas is a person. And then by doing service, then also it's greatly. Pushottama. Yeah. So. 1.2, 2.22 to 2.23. Respecting the Damodar Vrata in Mathura is glorified in the Padma Purana. Quote, the Lord being worshipped elsewhere awards material enjoyment and liberation to those worshippers. He does not give bhakti because bhakti controls the Lord. However, men can achieve bhakti to the Lord very easily by serving Damodara during the Kartik month in Mathura just once. Srila Prabhupada, in the Padma Purana it is said, the Lord may offer liberation or material happiness to a devotee, But after some devotional service has been executed, particularly in Mathura during the month of Kartik, the devotees want only to attain pure devotional service unto the Lord. Like you see, many devotees when, you know, that live outside, when they want to come and visit India, that then, you know, they'll come generally to Vrindavan or Mayapur. And so for many of them, they'll come during Kartik. Right? You know, especially if it's Vrindavan, they'll prefer Kartik, and if it's Mayapur, then around Gaur Purnima, but you know, like that. So the idea is that they're coming and rendering service, so that's, it's mentioned, it's you get so much benefit. The purport is that the Lord does not award devotional service to ordinary persons who are not serious about it. But even such unserious persons who execute devotional service according to the regulated principles during the month of Kartik and within the jurisdiction of Mathura in India are very easily awarded the Lord's personal service. 1.2.224. Observing the appearance day of the Lord, from verse 90, from the Bhavishyottara Purana. Bhavishyottara Purana. O Janardana, tell us the day that Devaki gave birth to you. O Vaikuntha, we will perform a festival on that day. O Keshava, may you be pleased with that festival performed by those who are completely surrendered to you. Srila Prabhupada, observing festivals celebrating the Lord's activities. In the Bhavishya Purana, there is a statement about observing different ceremonies celebrating the Lord's appearance, birthday, and other transcendental activities. It is said, my Lord Janardana, Krishna, please let us know the date when your mother Devaki gave birth to you. If you kindly inform us about this, then we shall observe a great celebration on this date. O killer of Keshi, we are souls 100% surrendered unto your lotus feet, and we wish only to please you with our ceremonies. The statement of the Bhavishya Purana gives evidence by observing different functions in relation with the Lord, one is sure to become pleasing to the Lord. Because it's all about pleasing the Lord. It's interesting is that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about a substance, so that is the substance, that has substance, then it has to have four aspects. Otherwise you can't, it doesn't exist. Right? It has to have existence, it has to have uniqueness, or, you know, specialness there, because otherwise if it's not, how do you tell the difference? Right? It has to have an activity, something that it accomplishes, and it has to have a purpose. Right? So all these aspects of the Chaturvyuha, so we see is that what we're dealing with, that the existence and uniqueness of the thing, that's the sambandha, the activity, what activity it can perform is the avideya, and then what is its purpose? Right? Does that make sense? So then, it's interesting, now if we look at it from the jnana, kriya, and icha shakti. So that means the icha is in that position of purpose. So that means all the knowledge, all the uniqueness of individuals and the elements of the field, all the activities are meant to produce results that have the purpose of pleasing Krishna. So if it's not pleasing Krishna, it's not actually a real result. It's not its purpose. Does that make sense? So we're using the jnana and kriya shaktis to do something other than what their purpose is. That's why we get reactions. Well, if you do things according to scripture, that means then you're doing it for, you're using it how it's supposed to be used, though at least maybe you're not doing it for the pleasure of Krishna. Does this make sense? So, I'm performing the activity, I'm using the elements according to scripture, I'm doing the things, I'm therefore getting the results that it says. Okay? So, those things are coming. Right? But, the real purpose is to please Krishna. But, how you've operated it, you won't get any bad reaction. You'll get the opportunity to work with those facilities again, because you used them properly. Right? But, the ultimate point is, so the mechanics of it you've gotten right, but the ultimate point is its real purpose use is to please Krishna. You're not doing it to please Krishna. Okay? So that means from that you won't get bhakti. You'll get what your intent is, karma or jnana. Does that make sense? So that's where the part is that it's not quite right yet. Does that make sense? Verse 1-2-225. Attachment to serving the lotus feet of the deity. From verse 90. From Adi Purana. I give bhakti and never liberation to the person who is always engaged in chanting my name and serving me as the goal in his life. Srila Prabhupada. Serving the deity with great devotion. It is said in the Adi Purana, quote, a person who is constantly engaged in chanting the holy name and who feels transcendental pleasure, being engaged in devotional service, is certainly awarded the facilities of devotional service and is never just given mukti, liberation. End quote. Mukti means liberation from material contamination. When liberated, one does not have to take birth again in the material world. The impersonalist desire to merge into the spiritual existence, to end their individual existence, right? So then that means technically they don't exist anymore. So if they don't exist, there's no uniqueness, so there's no activity, there's no actual purpose. So that's why I say a spiritual suicide, because then you're basically making yourself into an entity that doesn't exist. We know that that doesn't happen. They only think it happens. But the whole point is that one is completely ignoring this element. Right? Yeah. The normal condition of every living entity is to be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. From the statement of the Adi Purana, it appears that a devotee is satisfied simply being engaged in devotional service. He does not aspire for any liberation from material, conditional life. In other words, anyone who is engaged in devotional service is not in the material condition of life, although he may appear so. They're functioning here, but they're not in that, because material life means that experience that you get from it, the joys and sorrows of going through life here. The devotee doesn't experience that. Right? For them, it's about service to Krishna. So they're not experiencing this. They're experiencing what's beyond. Right? The spiritual world and all that. Because why does somebody want liberation? Right? Because the material world is so wonderful and nice and everything's so fabulous, right? Okay. So now the idea of liberation means you're getting out of the material world, right? Because the material world's bad. Okay, now the material world has form, it has activity, it has, you know, uniqueness, it has all these different experiences and all that. So, and it's bad. So now if we apply faulty logic, then we will think that, therefore, if we want to get out of the material world, we go to a place that doesn't have any of this. Right? No form, no uniqueness, no activities, no nothing. Right? Something like that. So, then that'll be a problem. And they think that by logic and intelligence they've come up with this, because anything from the material world, that it's giving problems, so therefore that's not proper, so that's sentimental if you're going for that. So using your intelligence, you're getting out of the material world, which is an intelligent thing to do, but the method of saying that how they're going about it and their concept of it, saying that that's intelligent, that's not intelligent. It's not logical. Because then if you say, if by logic you're working out that, okay, you have something here that we have. We say the material world is here. So therefore, then the spiritual world has to be the opposite, or the spiritual position. So that means that it doesn't have any of this, so there's nothing there. Right? It's nothing. It doesn't have any of this. So then the point is you're taking something and taking its opposite and saying that that's substance, right? This is illusion and that's substance. But now if we look at something with intelligence or logic that we're not biased to any opinion for, now if you take something, a substance, and take its opposite, that means it has no substance. Right? So, if something has no substance, it means it has no existence. So if it has no existence, why are you worried about it? Right? And if we're saying the material has no substance, then anything, any philosophy is based on observing this world, so the spiritual must be the opposite, can't have any substance either. Does that make sense? If I'm saying the spiritual has to be the opposite of this, because this has no substance, but if it has no substance, how do you generate anything from it? Anything generated from nothing is nothing. Does that make sense? If you're just using unbiased logic, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives this example in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. So that's the whole thing, is that it doesn't have any meaning. Right? That, so the devotee, he's not worried about the material world. He knows it's Krishna's energy, but he's absorbed in the real substance. Here has substance because it's a reflection. Like the shadow is there. It exists. It has uniqueness. It has it some function and this and that. You know what I'm saying? It does something. But it's inferior to the original. So he just absorbs himself there. He's not interested in mukti, whereas here it's a problem, let's get rid of this. No, he just absorbs himself in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, then the position of the world, the material world, just falls into its natural place. Right? As a shadow. Does that make sense? So it's not that you have to reject the world, you have to accept the spiritual world. Now, if all we know is the material world, then we have to reject that to get that. But we see is for these devotees on these more advanced levels, it's not that they're rejecting the material world, because it's Krishna's material world. But they're accepting service to Krishna and always absorbed in that. So they're absorbed in the transcendental platform. Right? 1.2.226. Relishing Bhagavatam, from verse 91, illustrated in this first canto.
We can't understand how a pure devotee feels on a Prem Bhakti platform.
No.
We can't understand. It can't be explained.
No. It means you can say, give symptoms, you can say it exists, but you can't explain what they feel.
So, Maharaj, the question is that what do they see when they see a carpet? What do they see like little Krishna inside? What do they see when they see a carpet?
He's running around the carpet. Why does he have to be running around in the carpet?
I don't know how to imagine. What do they see when they see a carpet?
Okay, what does the carpet do? Because it has an existence. It has a uniqueness. You can tell the difference. I mean, why put a carpet if it's just floor, right? It's different from the floor. And what does it actually do?
Helps the devotees.
Okay, and then so its purpose is?
So the devotee.
So then how that service to Krishna, that purpose is there, that's Krishna. That's what it said, the auspicious qualities. They all connect to Krishna. And so then that is Krishna, then they just remember Krishna. You don't have to remember him as the rug. We're the ones that are trying to figure out, okay, then this rug's because it's Krishna. And then if we remember Krishna from there and absorb ourselves, then great. But if we don't, at least we're starting to make that connection. That's the meaning of what it said before, is you offer those results. The 11th canto is talking about that. But we see for the Brajbasis, it's not an intellectual thing. They just immediately reminds them, you know, the carpet is beautiful. Krishna is the most beautiful. So the beauties come from Krishna. Or it's very, you know, how you say, it's very accommodating or very, very warm. Or all these qualities come from Krishna. So it's Krishna's qualities. His qualities, then those that of his body, those are pervading the cosmos through as Brahman, as Brahmajyoti, right? And so, therefore, that warmth in the carpet, or the beauty in the carpet, or whatever it is, the purity in the carpet. Let's say it's a wool carpet. That's why we use these wool blankets, like that. They may be horse blankets, but they're wool. Right? So then that means then that's all Krishna. That's why it does that. That's why it has its position. That's why it has its uniqueness. Even though it's based on Brahman, the point is that Brahman is Krishna's quality, so uniqueness is also a quality.
That makes sense.
So that's Jnana Yoga, how you connect yourself. But for them, they don't have to go through all those stages. It's just whatever is that attractive thing that just is reminds them of Krishna. If that somehow is an Udipan. If they're already thinking of Krishna for someone else, then that may not come up in their mind. Or if there's some devotees there, then they will go and give them a seat on the carpet. They'll sit there, so they're used for serving Vaishnavas. Point is, it's just absorbed in Krishna. You know, we're having to take ourselves from here and try to convert it. you know, does that make sense? We're trying to take, what is it, you know, hundreds of millions of lira and change it into something that, you know, like one bill that has some value. So, like I mentioned before, I remember I bought, back when they weren't so much, I think they were about $100, a, what do you call it, Walkman, those little Walkman recorders, the small ones. So I think they were around $100. So I went with somebody, they were going to buy one. And they went into the shop. This is in Poland, you know, back, you know, in the early 90s. And that Walkman cost 2.4 million zlotys. Like that. You know, since then they've taken quite a few zeros off, like that, but the point was is that, yeah, so we're trying to get some substance out of the material by connecting it to Krishna. Like that. Does that make sense?
It is more easy now with the euro.
Yes, yes, yes. So from the first canto, O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Sukadev Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.3. Srila Prabhupada, recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam among devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam is the desire tree of Vedic wisdom. Veda itself means the aggregate of knowledge. End quote. And whatever knowledge is required for human society is perfectly presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. There are different branches of knowledge in the Vedic writings, including sociology, politics, medicine, and military art. All these and other branches of knowledge are perfectly described in the Vedas. So as far as spiritual knowledge is concerned, that is also perfectly described here, and Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the ripened fruit of this desired fulfilling tree of the Vedas, right? So everything required for humans is described in the Vedas, and the ripened fruit of that, that mature ripened, is then the Srimad Bhagavatam. A tree is honored by the production of its fruit. For example, a mango tree is considered very valuable because it produces the king of all fruits, the mango. When the mango fruit becomes ripened, it is the greatest gift of that tree. And Srimad Bhagavatam is similarly held to be the ripened fruit of the Vedic tree. And as ripened fruit becomes more relishable when first touched by the beak of a parrot, or sukha, Srimad Bhagavatam has become more relishable by being delivered through the transcendental mouth of Sukadev Goswami. Mm-hmm. Srimad Bhagavatam should be received in disciplic succession without any breakage. When a ripened fruit comes from the upper part of the tree onto the ground by the process of being handed down from a higher branch to a lower branch by persons in the tree, the fruit does not break. Right? Because you're going to pick mangoes, you can't just, you know, throw a rock at it and then it falls down to where you are and then it, because it's ripe, so it becomes smushed. Right? So, people climb up the tree and then they pick and then they hand to the guys and then they hand to that until the guy on the ground, he receives it and then puts it in the basket. Right? So that's the parampara system. Srimad Bhagavatam then, when received in the parampara system or disciplic succession, will likewise remain unbroken. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.2 that the disciplic succession or parampara is the way of receiving transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge must come down through the disciplic succession, through authorized persons who know the real purpose of the shastra. So the real purpose is bhakti. That's what you're trying to do. So if when others, they go and they take all the aparavidya and all these different things, or even if they take the paravidya, they only take it up to the point of liberation. So they don't actually know what the Vedic literature is for. Right? Because if Krishna is giving, he's made the material world to give the living entity the opportunity to go back to Godhead. Right? And he gives the Vedic literature. Therefore, what's the Vedic literature going to describe? Right? How to go back to Godhead. not something else. All these other things are just helpful to make nice arrangements, right? That are useful in service to Krishna.
If we accept Krishna, we need to accept what is Vedanta.
Yes, we have to accept. But we have to accept it from the parampara. It means for us, in this case, through the instructions of the acharyas on Srimad Bhagavatam. With that view, you look at all the other Vedic literatures, anything. Anything's looked at from the perspective of Srimad Bhagavatam. If we use another perspective, it will be material. That's just the thing. In other words, Srimad Bhagavatam is the book. Lord Chaitanya's book was the Bhagavatam. He was the preacher of Bhagavatam. You say, well, I look at everything through Chaitanya Charitamrita. But that's Lord Chaitanya living his life according to Bhagavatam. You know? You say, well, you know, we only go out of Gita, but that's just the ABCs for Bhagavatam. Right? Nectar of Devotion is explaining the devotional, what the Bhagavatam is explaining about devotional service. Does that make sense? So all literature is just, actually, it means in the Gaudiya is all about Bhagavatam. And anything on the Vedic, it has its value in its connection to Bhagavatam. So that's the point, is that the Vedas are the knowledge, the Puranas are also Veda. And of the Puranas, then the Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost. So the essence of the whole Veda is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you understand the Veda through Srimad Bhagavatam, then you actually understand the Veda. Otherwise, not so much. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antyalila 13.113, recommended that one learn Srimad Bhagavatam from the mouth of the self-realized person called Bhagavatam. Bhagavata means in relation with the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Quote, is it? Or that's the end quote. Oh, that was here. In relation with the... Okay, that was the quote. So the devotee is sometimes called Bhagavatam, and the book, which is in relation with devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is also called Bhagavatam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended that, in order to relish the real taste of Srimad Bhagavatam, one should take instruction from the person Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is relishable even by a liberated person. Sugare Goswami admitted that although he was liberated from within the very woman's mother, it was only after relishing Srimad Bhagavatam that he became a great devotee. Right, so he's already liberated, but it's only when he relishes Bhagavatam, that's when he becomes a devotee. Thus, one who is desirous of advancing in Krishna consciousness should relish the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam through the discussions of authorized devotees. That's the whole point. So if it's not in line with the founder Acharya, it doesn't have any value for us. And so, and Rupa Goswami himself is saying you approach the previous Acharyas, means even himself, through our founder Acharya. So that's the point. We have to see from that perspective. If you want to realize Krishna and go back to Godhead, if you have another mundane concept, then hey, go for it. It means there's plenty of opportunity. Right? Because you can say, oh, but I want to feel like and think whatever I want. You can do that. And where will that thinking take you? Mundane thinking will take you where? It's not going to go in a straight line. It's going to go around in a circle. And that circle in Sanskrit is called samsara. Right? So, yeah. It's a free world. But Krishna is giving the option that you can be free to become free from this world. Right? Srila Jiva Goswami. O path to the great, to the highest bliss, bhavu kaha. O men who appreciate the love of the Supreme Lord, rasikaha. You, situated on this earth, bhuvi, please relish and internalize, pibata, the fruit called the Bhagavatam, the very form of rasa, rasam alayam, which has dropped down, galitam, to this earth, coming from the tree of the Vedas, which grows in Vaikuntha and gives all types of fruit on its branches and twigs. Ah, you have attained that which cannot be easily attained. Aho. Right? So that's to these great men. So the Vedas, it's rooted in Vaikuntha. And so you can say, yes, it's not from here. But it comes from the spiritual. We're also not from here. If we're from matter, then yes, you can say, you know, this is foreign to us. But otherwise, we're not from here either. Right?
Nothing is from
here. No. The energy is also from Krishna. Yeah, so that's a good point. There's nothing from here.
Everything is important.
Everything's important. Everything's important. By using the word rasa as a modifier, the Bhagavatam is described as having sweetness, but the real intention is to proclaim that Bhagavatam is completely sweetness. It's not that it's having sweetness, it is sweetness. Right? It is sweetness alone and nothing else. The scripture called the Bhagavatam is indeed tasty, or rasavat, but is designated by the word rasa to indicate that it is solely composed of rasa, or sweet taste. Moreover, by the word Bhagavatam, that which is related to Bhagavan, the Lord, it is indicated that sweetness or rasa also belongs to the Lord. Right? Otherwise, how could the Bhagavatam be sweetness if it's talking about the Lord, if the Lord's not sweetness? Right? Okay. Since the Bhagavatam is the tadiya of the Lord, dear object related to the Lord, rasa also is the tadiya of the Lord. So it's a paraphernalia, so that means then the person must have that. Bhagavatam means related to the Lord. Thus, the words Bhagavatam rasam can also mean rasa or sweetness related to the Lord. End quote. The definition of rasa is indeed a relationship of pure affection for the Lord. This is understood from the statements of results described from reading the Bhagavatam. Simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, the feeling for loving devotional service to the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.7. The word rasa is also employed in the Shruti to indicate directly Bhagavan, since he is composed completely of rasa. The Shruti also says, raso vaisaha, he is rasa. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7.1. This rasa is also the highest objective. Rasam hyevayam labdvan tanadi bhavati. Attaining that rasa, Bhagavan, the jiva becomes blissful. And thus the word rasika used in this verse indicates that realization of this rasa belongs to those persons who have become accomplished in rasa only through long impressions in past and present lives, since one has to realize the Lord to realize rasa. And so, therefore, there's the impressions that build of the Lord in devotional service, then at some point then that matures into that attraction to the Lord, that rati. That then matures into prema. Right? So that means this love for Krishna with rasa, with this taste.
On the topic of rasa, Dr. Patel, in a typical Indian smug way, started with Prabhupada, that I read the Brahma Vihon Leela in the original Sanskrit. Your boys must have not read in the original Sanskrit. In the original Sanskrit, the rasa. Prabhupada replies in Hindi that for the taker of rasa, he can see the rasa anywhere, in any language.
Yes. Yes, that's the thing. Because they think it's there. And okay, yes, it's there, something. But like you said, because that smugness and that, then it means how can you have taste if you're tasting the taste of pride, how can you be tasting the sweetness of Krishna? Right? Okay. The word rasa... Okay, no, we did that. The word galitam, fallen down and also liquid and dripping, indicates the extremely ripened state of a fruit, and concerning literature, scriptures, it indicates it is very relishable nature, as well as its success at bringing out the meaning of scripture in the most skillful manner. The word rasam, juice, used in describing a fruit indicates that the fruit is totally without skin, seed, or other defects. Concerning scriptures, it indicates that the scripture is without any inferior parts. Stating that the Bhagavatam is the supreme fruit of the tree of the Vedas indicates that the Bhagavatam is the highest goal of human endeavor. Though the completely sweet fruit is excellent by its nature, in order to convey its supreme position, another excellence is then described. In describing the fruit, an analogy is given. Because of living in the tree, the parent astonishingly develops a very sweet mouth. The fruit, touched by the parent's beak, the parent's sweet mouth becomes additionally sweet. In the same way, the description of the Lord touched by the mouth of highly elevated devotees becomes even sweeter. Right? So at this point, we shouldn't fall back on that sometimes devotee says, well, it's just a poetic thing that it's saying, because when the fruit is ripe, that the parents will only come and eat that. You know, and that's why it is, but it has nothing to do really with the parrot. But you know that those ones are ripe because the parrot will go for the ripe ones, so the ones it bites are the ripe ones, therefore you're getting the best fruit. Right? This kind of mundane approach is absolutely useless. Because by that explanation, does it bring out the point of the disciplic succession and hearing it from the mouth of the devotees? Absolutely not. So by bringing up this mundane so-called fact, how does that improve the quality of one's appreciation? Right? And two, the other thing is when scripture says that by living in the tree they develop a sweet mouth, that's what happens. Even though you don't believe it according to one's natural atheistic, scientific background. Who cares? Like that. I'm throwing my lot in with the acharyas. You can throw your lot, and others can throw their lot in with the nuclear physicists and other such scientists. And then we'll see at the end of the day, like Prabhupada told that professor in Russia, at the time of death, we'll see who actually comes out doing okay. And now it looks like it might be a storm, so we might end here. Right? Okay, so, job. See the Prabhupada job. On that sweet note. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.